For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello everybody, I am Lucia Matuonto and welcome to the Relatable Voice podcast, a talk show where my guests and I talk about relatable everyday situations, books, and the environment we live in. Remember to subscribe and follow the podcast on social media so you can be notified when a new episode is available. Let's begin. Today we are honored to have Richard Perkins join us. We are driving to Madison to talk with him about his mother's memoir, Spring Flower. Richard, welcome to the RV.
Thank you so much, Lucia, for having me on your show. Sure. In your RV, yep.
Yes, of course. Richard, you devoted 10 years to editing and finalizing your mother's memoir, Spring Flower. So what drove you to take on this monumental task?
So it was foolishness on my part to make a promise to my mother in 2014. I went to see my mother in her nursing home. She had been there for about 9 years and had been battling dementia for about 15 or 16 years. And so it was early 2014. I greeted her Happy New Year. And then she hadn't been responding to anyone for quite some time. So my conversations with her were all monologues. And I said, Happy New Year. And then I said, you made it through another year. And why are you still here? Why don't you want to be free on the other side or up there somewhere? And then I was about to leave, and then I said, maybe I know why you're actually worried about who is going to finish your memoir, complete your memoir. So I said, maybe I will do it only if you promise me that you will leave, be free whenever you're ready. And couple months later, she died, as if she had hurt me. And the promise was not a casual one, but it was so fast that I was quite surprised. And I didn't know at the time how I was going to fulfill this. Yeah. But nonetheless, it became a promise that I wanted to work hard at completing and fulfilling it.
Of course. And can you provide us with some background information about your lovely mother?
My mother was born in 1931 in China during the catastrophic river flood. The river's name is Yangtze River, and it's one of the worst natural disasters in the 20th century worldwide. It killed about upwards of 4 million people. But my mother miraculously survived and was given up for adoption to kindest American missionaries, medical missionaries. And so she essentially, when she was actually 10 months old, so she essentially grew up in an American family. And then during World War II, she and her parents, I guess that they will be my American grandparents, they lived in Yonkers, New York for a few years. And so her upbringing, her environment, surrounding, were all English speaking Westerners, missionaries. And then the years living in Yonkers, New York, basically solidified or affirmed her identity as American. And English was pretty much her native, if not first language. Mm-hmm. And then they went back to China post-war because my American grandparents were devoted missionaries. They want to go back to China to help Chinese people. But they didn't know that the civil war broke out between the communist armies and then the government at the time is called Republic Nationalist. And so after about 3, 4 years, communists took over China. I drove them Republic Nationalists to Taiwan, today's Taiwan. And but my American grandparents stayed for a while because the new communist government needed a functional hospital and needed a skilled surgeon. My grandfather was a surgeon, and my grandparents, when they went to China back in the early 20th century, they had to build a hospital in China. But then the Korean War started in 1950, and that was a proxy war between America and China on Korean Peninsula. And so they had to flee, and my mother was trapped in China because she was a freshman at an English-speaking college about 300 miles away, and she couldn't get away. And then so she then spent the next 30 years living in China. And then in 1980, she was able to, in essence, return to the U.S. or return to America, a place that she called home.
So you were born in China.
I was, yes.
Okay. And your mom, Jan Fran Perkins,
Yeah.
am I saying it correctly? Can you correct?
Perfect. Yep. Absolutely. Yep.
Yes. So basically, she arrived in the US in 1942. Could you discuss the challenges your mom encountered while navigating her identity and sense of belonging between American and Chinese cultures? Did she stay in contact with her mother during these years she was living in the US?
Great question. So, in some strange, twisted way or ironic way, my mother's identity was completely messed up, right? She was Chinese, born in a dirt poor, born in a dirt poor family. During the flood, they couldn't obviously raise more children, and then of course, girls, baby girls weren't valued in China, particularly back in the earlier part of the 20th century. And so then she was raised by Americans, and then she was surrounded by Westerners, and then she lived in America and she spoke English mostly. And so her identity was American. And then when her parents left the fled China during Korean War, she had to really made herself learn Chinese, right? And also its culture and history. But yet for the 30 some years living in China, she was essentially a walking foreigner in her own birth country. And then people around her felt she was strange because she actually spoke Chinese with a little bit of American accent she was trying to hide. And then yet this person didn't behave anywhere, and the persona, demeanors weren't the same. And yet she looked Chinese, right? So, and then during those 30 years, her image of American, like her own American parents, her image of America were really important for her, allowing her to survive, because those were the images she held close to her heart. To know that, to give her hope, to keep her hoping that someday that she will be free again, right, so to speak, if you will. And so, but then after coming back to America, America had already changed, moved on from 1942, and of course, became another set of struggles that she wasn't prepared for, and realizing now she is a real foreigner. In America, a place that she actually regarded as her home for 30 years, and held close to her heart, wanting to come back. And that was, what hope is what keeps a person alive. So keep on surviving and thriving. So that became another chapter of her life where her identity was, because now in America, they saw her as an immigrant, an outsider. And not American. They were surprised by how well she spoke. But so what, right? So you're Chinese and you're not a Caucasian and you're outsider. You just immigrated to this country, and so it's very ironic how
It is.
every 20 some years of her life and her identity switched to the other side where she was not prepared for.
Was she able to be a ophthalmologist in the US?
Great question. She gave up her clinical practice, which was probably not the wisest idea. She became against all odds in China, she became a highly acclaimed ophthalmologist and surgeon. She was really good. People would seek her out from hundreds of miles out to ask her to do the operation or surgery. And she came here, she was more into research. She was in China too. But here the opportunities and conditions for research is fantastic, right? So then she devoted herself those years after she came back to the US, working mainly in the research laboratory, specializing in glycoma.
Your mama is a warrior.
Thank you
Bless
for
your
saying
heart.
that. I think you hit the nail right on the head. Yeah, she was. So it's very daunting for me.
Yeah, good that you made a promise. Richard, did you learn how to speak English with your mom? Did she share with you about the US when you were in China?
I'm so glad you asked. I came here, I was 14 and shortly turned to 15. And I had to learn English, a language I knew hardly anything about, nothing, practically nothing about. And I didn't know anything about my mother's past, her history, her stories of living in America and so on, until I was literally on an airplane on my way to New York City. And then my mother was trying to start filling me in about who she was and how she came about and who my, I guess, maternal grandparents were. And it was very shocking for me because suddenly she looked like a stranger, complete stranger, alien to me because I had known nothing about any of that until then. And so I was shocked by her stories. I was shocked by the culture in this country. I was shocked by the language I had to learn from ground zero.
It must have been difficult for you to restart.
Totally. My experience might have been very similar to my mother's experience in 1950. She had to learn Chinese. And I had to learn English, so similar but in reverse. Yeah.
And Richard, your mother's memoir spans significant historical events and personal encounters, including interactions with influential figures like Mahatma Gandhi and
Yeah.
Mao Zedong.
Right. Yeah.
So, how did you manage the task of organizing and editing such a multifaceted narrative? Because you had to research a lot.
I did. It was extremely daunting for me, especially as I was telling you, in the early 1980s, English was totally foreign to me. And then in class, I attended junior high, high school, and then college. Every time I had to write a 500-word essay, it was like pulling teeth. And so, for a kid who couldn't put together a couple of complete sentences at one point, I was staring at 1,000 pages of manuscripts and notes and what my mother left behind, incomplete chapters, handwritten stories, and scattered in three boxes, huge boxes. And so, it took enormous toll on me physically. And then later on, mentally and emotionally too. So I retired early, partially, and I also abandoned my career as a professor teaching chemistry, partly because of this memoir. And I had to not only research online reading, so I had advantage over her situation back in 1980s. At least I can search online, and there are so much materials, information that you can within your fingertips. But I still made many trips to China. I interviewed a lot of people because she actually left so many gaps where I didn't know how to fill. And then even though I grew up, I spent the first 14 years of my life in China. I knew quite a bit about the era, but there were plenty of time, plenty of years I was too young to understand or fathom the magnitude of the situation. So I had to go to China, retrace her footsteps, where she had lived and worked, where I had lived. And so it was immense learning opportunity. That at times I dreaded it and want to abandon or walk away or run away from this promise, I guess. But I, with a lot of help, with many people pitching in, editors and publishers, ultimately this became a reality. Yeah, so I'm grateful for all these people.
That's good. And your mother is alive in this work you finalized.
Yes, so her story will live on. I guess that would be the one consequence or outcome of this process. And the other, I think, when she decided to do all of this back in 1980s, she actually not only wanted to tell people that she was a unique witness to history, right, as you had alluded to very poignantly, but also, just some of the most extraordinary people that she had the fortune of encountering, starting from her American parents and then going all the way to people she met later during those 30 years trapped in China. And those people helped her, allowing her to survive and not thrive. So she wanted those people to be remembered and honored. And because those people actually made her life worthwhile remembering.
And what were some of the most surprising revelations you uncovered about your mother's life while working on Spring Flower? Not, please don't give up our too much. Was there something that personally impacted you?
Yeah, there were actually many. Well, not countless, but just many. And I can just point out to one thing. Compiling her memoir made me realize that my life actually mimics hers on multiple levels. Although not to her extremes. I mean, she experienced natural disasters, war, genocide. I experienced other things, so to a much lesser extent. But there are similarities, and actually, you've already pointed some of that out, or you made me answer some of that in the earlier questions. So she was born during a catastrophic flood that killed upwards of 4 million people in 1931. I was born at the onset of Mao's proletarian cultural revolution and one of the man-made disasters, cataclysmic event in Chinese modern history. And so that mirrored me, or mirror, yeah, I guess my mother and I are kind of like mirror images, right? So I mirror my life after hers, and then like her, she was adopted by American missionaries, and she was able to live and survive. So during the Cultural Revolution, my father was imprisoned and went to a labor camp, and my mother, given her American and religious background, so she was constantly whisked away for these rustication reform programs. Although she was allowed to work in a hospital because she was a highly skilled surgeon, they needed the physicians, I guess. But my sister and I mostly grew up on our own, except we couldn't have survived without these very kind-hearted neighbors we had. They reached over the aisle, crossed the party lines, ideological lines, sometimes risking their lives to help. children now perceived anti-revolutionist families. So they were the heroes and heroines of my life, my sister's life, allowing us to survive. And we owe it to these fantastic human beings living next door. We sometimes call them angels in disguise. And they were proletarians, so they weren't being persecuted, and so they were risking their life to help children of a perceived anti-revolutionist or anti-revolutionistic family. And so, so I think even for me, compiling my mother's memoir, recognizing these similarities, of course, between my mother's life and mine, and allowing me to also remembering some of these some of these extraordinary people that I had the fortune of encountering, and now I have the opportunity to remember them and honor them also.
And were you able to meet with them when you went to China?
Yes, I did. That's a great question. Early 2000s, some of these people were still alive and healthily living, I guess. And then they were very surprised to see me because they hadn't seen me for more than 20 years, ever since I was put into a cab and went to the airport and put onto the airplane and left China with my mother. So they were pretty moved when they saw me, and so was I. Yeah. So that encounter, that experience, in hindsight now, right, helped writing parts of this memo. Yeah.
And what's next for you?
Oh, excellent question. I don't know. After the third one came out a year ago, I decided to do nothing. I kind of thought I deserved it, that deserved time off. And then so for the past 6 months, I've been on this campaign trail to promote my mother's memoir. And so I'm glad you asked, and to answer your question, I would love to write some more or keep on writing, maybe writing another book or two down the road in the near future. Yes. Something a little less tragic, a little more humor or happiness involved.
Yes, but keep writing. Writing is so good. And now you have more time because you finished the memoir. Richard, your mother's resilience truly shines through. So, what message do you hope readers will take away from this book?
Yeah, good question. I think there are several. Maybe I'll just mention one. My mother lived a very turbulent life, right? Experienced the multiple extremes of historical proportions, and but somehow she was capable of facing many of these challenging moments head on, and that's far more than what I can say about myself. And but she was able to do that not just because of self, but because of her own effort. But she had help from many, many people, as I alluded to earlier, extraordinary people who ever lived on this planet during one of the most trying period in human history. So because of these people allowed her to hang on to this childlike conviction that things will work out by the end of the day, right? Humanities will always prevail. And so she never seemed to have lost hope. And I think combining with these people who had helped her and her own conviction, her own sense of hope, I think that's probably the message of her memoir. I hope it comes through.
It's an inspiring story, and it shows that we should be grateful, yeah,
Yes.
and don't give up, don't give up.
And yes, don't ever give up, and both history doesn't repeat itself.
Exactly. Richard, how can our listeners find you and your books online?
So the books are available from Amazon. and also Barnes Noble.
And do you have social media?
Yes, I do. I have a LinkedIn page. It will be Richard Perkins, and then my last name, Shum, Ahsung. Yeah.
So, Richard, I will love to go back to medicine to talk with you again. As soon as you publish a new book, our doors are always open for you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, likewise. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you'll be notified when the next one is posted. Please rate this podcast and share it with your friends. Thank you for listening, and remember, relationships don't exist. Relating does. Until next time.